1, 2, 3.
Do it.
Case on a deep drop. Steps up in the pocket. He'll fire to the right side. Caught by Diggs. Stay up.
Oh, my God. Loose.
Oh, my God. At the 30.
No.
Tay. Touchdown. Are you kidding me?
Michael Bennett.
It's a Minneapolis miracle.
All right, we're coming back in for another edition of the Scolgers podcast after a crushing defeat by the hands of the vaunted Buffalo Bills. Your Vikings being defeated 27-6. Mike, what happened?
Not much.
That's all you got to say. Just not much.
I never thought we'd be recording this show, so you know.
Yeah. So literally in the show notes, we have what went wrong, everything. What went right, nothing. So I have a couple stats I kind of broke down from looking at the game log. First off, average field position. Buffalo, on average, started at their own 40.2 yard line. Minnesota started at our own 17.7 on average. I think that includes five that were with inside the 10 that the Minnesota offense started at. And also even more telling that the Buffalo field position, two of their drives were full drives length of the field. Another one started inside their 10. So that should show you just how often they were in a short yardage situation, that their average was still almost midfield.
Right.
So obviously, this game got out of hand. It got out of hand quick. I think before you blinked, I'm going to look up the game log here in a second, but I think we had, what, four plays on offense? And by the time we had that, they were already up by 17.
Well, and then you had the unfortunate, you know, we had sacked Allen basically on third down to stop that first drive, and Linval kind of came in to help with the sack and ended up, you know, going helmet to helmet. It was kind of a weird helmet to helmet. I don't know if they really showed it there, but it was almost like he ran to grab him. The helmets collided. It wasn't like a dive. Obviously, you know,
and the helmets kind of bumped. Yeah, I don't think that was malicious at all. But obviously, they're going to call it. So just to recap here. So they go down. They go down 75 yards. They score. Which again, I implore you, this is not. This is not out of the ordinary for a Zimmer defense. It typically takes a series or two, sometimes a series or three, for the defense to kind of get in the rhythm, adjust to what they're trying to do, and kind of get their bearings. So I wasn't as concerned with them driving down the length of the field on their first possession. But then you have Kirk Cousins, third play, gets sacked, strip sacked, and they recover at R15. Immediately short field. The Vikings hold the 3 points there. So I think that's more than you can expect from a defense being put in that situation.
Right.
We get the ball back, and it was two runs, and then on third down and eight, another strip sack. They recovered at 25. They were able to put it in for a touchdown. So the entirety of that, the Vikings had the ball for a total of 2.5 minutes game clock. No, less than that. 2 minutes game clock. So your defense is out there almost the entirety of the first quarter, heels to the wall twice after a long drive already. I don't think you're going to see many defenses that can withhold that situation to 17 points. That's impossible to be starting off at that position. So I don't know what you feel about that. What you feel about that start? I don't know if there's much more to say about it. That's just a horrible start to the game. And kind of set the tone for the rest of the afternoon.
Well, I mean, yeah, I wasn't, you know, it's like, okay, you give up the 7, fully expected the way this offense has been going. I mean, we looked unstoppable just, you know, a week ago against Green Bay. My criticism was that we actually, you know, kind of just we ran essentially to set up the Carlson kick. And I was hoping we would have just tried to pass because everyone was so open, and I get Green Bay's secondary was gassed and whatever else, but we put up a ton of points in that fourth quarter. We were moving the ball at will through the air. I mean, it just Cousins looked unreal. Everything looked great. And then you come into this game, and it's like, all right, whatever. You go the first series, whatever. Well, I mean, it's like, okay, now it was series after. I mean, fumble, obviously, to start, which, you know, I don't know what to think on that. I mean, the one was a hell of a play by the defensive guy that came around and knocked it out. I think the other one was, you know, one of the other storylines we'll obviously get to in which Reef was beat badly and the guy batted the ball out of his hands. It was frustrating. It took me off guard. It took everybody I was with watching off guard. I mean, they looked like a bad football team in every facet. We couldn't move the ball. I mean, Latavius Murray, you know, with Dalvin out, had 2 rushes for 1 yard. Mike Boone had 2 for 11. I mean, we didn't even really try to establish a run.
Okay, but I'm going to have to interject with you on that one, because the reason why we didn't establish a run is because before you blinked, we had 6 offensive plays and we were down 17-0.
I understand
what you're saying, that we should have tried to establish a run, but you're already down that much that quickly. You got to start trying to do something else, and obviously the running was not working to the effect that they wanted in those 4 rushing plays. So I don't necessarily disagree with trying to go to the passing game. I disagree with how they chose to attack the passing game. Obviously, Reef was having issues. He surrendered 12 pressures, which is the most of, I think, anyone in the last 3 years in a single game. That's a huge problem, and that's something where Flip needs to adjust in-game and say, okay, we're going to start doing these quick passes to get this ball out quicker. I don't know how many 5-7-step drops were just... like pockets immediately collapsing. You got to give him some kind of a short throw to make these high percentage passes, and then once you get that rhythm going, then you start to try to maybe establish the run a bit more.
Yeah, I mean, I guess to me it's just those points went up in such a hurry that you know, we continuously had possessions in the first and second quarter where even when you're down 14-0, 17-0, whatever, I still think at that point, you know that you've got weapons on offense. I would have treated it, you know, and I get you can't treat it as a 0-0 game, but I mean, 4 carries total is absurd to me. And I know you didn't have Dalvin, but I don't know. That blew me away a little bit. I think you nailed it. They did. It was a lot of shorter passes, but it was a weird way to go about it. It was almost like we were watching a Vikings team from a few years ago where everyone was continually frustrated that guys were running 1 yard short of the first down. I don't know how many times that happened on Sunday. Between Thielen and Latavius and everyone, they're literally running 1 yard short of the first down, and it blows my mind when people do that. I don't understand it. It made no sense that they were doing that consistently. I mean, I don't know. We could go on forever on the things that went wrong in this game.
You see, for me, this is why I tend to side a little bit with Paul Allen on this. We call this at the end of the game. This is an aberration, all right? This is a game where literally everything was out of sync, everything was off, that it's very difficult to be able to pick out something from this except the very glaring issues and say, yep, this is going to be a problem going forward. Yep, this is going to be a problem going forward. Because the wide receivers getting short of the line, I don't think that's a continuous problem that's going to be going forward. The all the defensive struggles we had, I don't think that's going to be a significant problem going forward. Because you forget, honestly, in a game like this, that we didn't give up a point halfway through the second quarter and on. This was 27-0 with 6 minutes remaining in the second quarter. We didn't give up a single point after that.
Yeah.
And I mean, you can say they went a little bit conservative. They really didn't by the game script. The entirety of the third quarter, they were passing. They were trying to get the ball down. They were trying to keep their foot on the gas, and we were able to stifle them. So, I mean, the defense still deserves some blame because there were some pretty glaring misassignments, but all in all, they adjusted just fine to this game, and they gave the offense every chance they could to put this one together. And they just kept on not getting it going and shooting themselves in the foot. I mean, the amount of times we're sitting there inside our own 20 is just absolutely absurd.
Right. I would definitely agree with you that the defense was put into some very difficult situations. I think that there were some, I mean, obviously there were a lot of plays that are not typical of this Vikings on both sides of the ball. But there were a couple key third down conversions that the Bills were able to achieve. A couple of them on kind of fluky plays. I mean, Josh Allen hurdles Anthony Barr outright, which is something that you almost never see quarterbacks do.
I mean, you can almost blame that on them not wanting to take a penalty. It seemed like Barr has been playing scared the last two games, not wanting to take a penalty.
Well, and I mean, you know, it's one play, but then you know, Chris Ivory burns you for a 55-yard screen, you know, on a third down, I think it was. We consistently watching it. It's like, okay, we're going to hold them here. We're going to get the ball, and the offense is going to get going. And then they'd get a first down, or, you know, then the offense would eventually get a ball, and maybe we pick up 7 or 8 on first down, and then you couldn't get any more of it. And then you take a penalty. I know, one thing I said is the lack of concern I felt through Twitter, through the fan base in general. I felt like people are kind of doing what you're saying here, where it's a burn the tape, it's a sweep it under the rug, it is what it is. But the Buffalo Bills were a horrible football team. I mean, they lost 47-3. They gave up 31 the following week. This had a guy retire. They took play calling away. They were without LeSean McCoy. I mean, this was a battered and bruised team in many ways. And for them to come in and basically, you know, almost pitch a shutout to a team that's supposed to be unbeatable at home, this game raises a lot more flags to me than it would appear most general fans. And I think that we're taking it a little too light.
Okay, here's what I'll say to this. I don't think we're taking it too light, and the reason why that I'm saying that is because some of these issues we knew were going to be there. We knew the O-line issues were going to be prevalent. We knew that. This is a makeshift line right now. We do not have all of our starters. Elfline played for 22 snaps during the game. I think that's probably a third of the snaps of the game. All right. If you believe the reports with Reef being out today with a foot injury, he was playing hurt, if you believe that. Hill went down. So our O-line is an issue that we knew about. We knew this was an issue. All right. And it showed its head here. Now, should it have with the quality that the Bills defensive line is? Maybe not. I'll get to that in a second. The offense, new quarterback, new coordinator. We knew this was going to be a struggle to get this going. We knew this was going to take time. Now, we got lucky. You could say we get lucky in the end of the fourth quarter/overtime of the Green Bay game. And arguably, you saw some of these signs in week one where stuff wasn't immediately firing. We kind of got in the rhythm late, but we knew this was going to be a struggle. Typically, if you have a new OC and a new quarterback, it takes a while to gel. So we knew these two things were going to be a problem. All right. Now, the special teams, you're without Sherrills. So that throws an extra wrench there. Everything that went wrong with the special teams, I mean, 80% of it was due to the returner not returning properly. And we end up with these short fields that we have to try to work ourselves out of. So there's part of that. And then the defense, a couple misassignments. You had Mac Alexander, you had Mike Hughes, rookie, in there. So some of these mistakes are bound to happen, all right? So this is why I say I'm not as super concerned as you are that this team is this bad, because here's what we went into this game with. We were favored by 17 points. We knew the Rams were coming up on Thursday. So where is any player's head at? It's a natural tendency to say, okay, we can overlook the Bills. They're not a threat. Let's try to focus a little bit on the Rams and try to save ourselves for that. Okay? And then you look at this Bills team. They've been crushed in 1 week. They made it competitive last week. They're coming into this game where no one is giving them any respect. You got to imagine they're coming into this game pretty damn hot and pretty ready to show the rest of the world, hey, we're still an NFL football team and we can still do this. And then they get a couple lucky bounces go their way, and they capitalize on it and they don't look back. That's the way I see this game.
I think that certainly there were, I mean, the bounces went their way. You know, they even did a little segment on it at the end of the game where, the ball bounced directly to a couple of their guys. It seems like we've had that luck for, we've had that luck as Vikings fans for a while. O-line, I understand it was an issue. It's just that I thought it had played relatively okay, if you will, the first couple games. And I know we're going to give up a sack here or there, but I mean, Reef was a turnstile, and it was one of those things where I was not expecting the O-line to be that bad. And then on top of it, it looked like a different offense to me. I mean, where was the down the field and stretching it and finding guys? And I thought, you know, Diggs was basically non-existent for the most part. Thielen, I know, had 14 catches, which is great. A lot of it came kind of in garbage time, so to speak. But where's Treadwell and some of these guys that have been getting open a little bit down the field? I don't know. It threw me off guard a little bit. And yeah, I'm not burning it to the ground at this point. And I know it's not this bad of a football team, but it was eye-opening to me, just like the Eagles game was last year, that, you know, you can just get beat that bad. And this situation is obviously different than the Eagles game, right? This is at home against a team you know you should beat. I mean, we're basically pegging every home game as a win for the most part. And so I don't know, this just completely changed the way that I'm going to view every game going forward, in that now I need to worry about, are they going to show up every week? You know?
Okay. I mean, but do you have to worry about that? Because there's been one game historically each year that the Vikings have given up more than 21 points, or that have lost by more than 20 points under the Zimmer era. Okay. Last year it was the NFC Championship game. Not a great time to have that. Year before that, 2016, it was Indianapolis. I believe that was week 15, something like that. And then the year before that, 2015, was to the Seattle Seahawks. We lost 38-7. You know what we did after the Seattle Seahawks game? The next game after that game, after that Cardinals game, or after that Seattle game, was the Cardinals on Thursday Night Football. All right, same situation here. We gave up a lot of points to a team arguably better than the Bills, but still, we got crushed, okay? We go into the Cardinals. We play them tough. I believe we're also without Harrison and some of the... We're without two of the main starters on defense in that Cardinals game.
Yeah.
That game we lost 20-23, and we only lost because Mike Harris gave up a strip sack to Teddy because we somehow called an over-the-middle pass instead of rushing the ball to try to pick up a few more yards. All right, we were in position to tie that game and possibly win it towards the end. So you look at the response there. I mean, yeah, I understand. This is a horrible loss, horrid loss. You can't really defend this from a lot of angles. But historically, we've come back from these types of games and put up a decent fight, or come really close to winning and say for one or two plays. It's I don't know. I'm not as concerned about us standing up constantly as you are. This is, for whatever reason, it happens once a year, and hopefully it only happens once this year, and this is it, and we never see this type of performance again.
Well, let me give you kind of two part here. You know, A, typically I'm kind of a history is history guy. You know, obviously, if you're talking about Brady and some of these Patriots teams that have been dominant, then I think you can go back and reflect on some of the things like you're talking about. But 2 years ago, we didn't have a caliber of football team that I think we do right now. Last year, yes, maybe. But, you know, some of that stuff, I mean, I don't know. I guess it's stats, it's history. But to me, I don't know that I necessarily look into that and can make comparisons. I mean, yeah, you got the coach, you got whatever. But I don't know. It is what it is for me in that standpoint. But I think going forward, yes. I mean, I was not looking forward to this game on Thursday night against the Rams, a team that has far and away looked like the best team in the NFL through 3 weeks.
Okay. I mean, first, can we just revisit that before we get into the preview show? Because who have the Rams beaten? Like,
what? Okay, but hang on.
No. That's a valid thing. If you're saying they look like the best team, who have they beaten? They've beaten the Raiders. Okay.
Raiders.
Who in the first half, that score was very competitive. Okay. And then they've beaten the Arizona Cardinals, a team that looks like hot garbage right now, especially when Bradford was at the helm. And then they just beat a reeling Chargers team who's had a bevy of issues on the defense. All right. And they didn't beat them by much. Okay. They still beat them by double digits, but that was 34-25, whatever it was. 35-23. So they're not putting away decent teams like the Chargers, and they're crushing the teams they're supposed to crush, like the Cardinals, and they're beating the teams they're supposed to beat, like Oakland. They to me don't read as like the far and away best team in the NFC right now.
And the Vikings are not crushing the teams they're supposed to crush. They're losing to them by 21.
I am not saying that we don't have our own issues. What I am trying to fight back on is the Rams look incredible right now because they are not playing quality opponents. They still have to face us, which is still a quality opponent no matter how you face it. They still have to face Philadelphia and New Orleans this year. Okay. They still have these tests that are going to come up that are going to show what
they're trying. I'm not crowning the Rams right now, but I think that...
You want to crown them? I'll crown them!
Through 3 weeks, I do think they're the best team in the NFL. I also have read a few things about how they're basically playing, not necessarily preseason, but they have a little bit of an exhibition vibe through some of these games. They're trying out some things. They're getting used to things. They wanted to come into the season healthy, so they rested a lot of guys in the preseason, more so than a team typically would.
Sure.
And so, I mean, there are some moving pieces there, but where I was going originally is that I wasn't looking forward to this game on a Thursday, short week after, you know, and then now you've got a little bit of different circumstances, right? You've probably got an extremely hungry Vikings team because they're coming off one of the worst losses in their team history, if you ask me. You're going against one of the best teams in the NFC, most likely. A team that now is down two of its best players from cornerback in Tlaib and Peters, both expected to miss the league. And so now it's kind of a different, now I'm almost excited. I mean, I know it's still a short week and that's always a problem. But you know, if they don't show us something on Thursday, I guess, you know, then I will start to have concerns. If all of a sudden they come in and they get blown out and they look bad and it just, it's again, one of those. I mean, at that point, I think you do start sounding, you know, the proverbial alarm a little bit. Since you're then going into Philadelphia after that.
But. I 100% agree. So Thursday is going to be big for two reasons. It's going to be big for one, how do you bounce back from being punched in the mouth this hard? If they show up and they're absolutely flat, even for a Thursday game, then yeah, I'm right there with you. It's a lot more concerning than I would have thought before. However, if they go in there and they show out, and even if they're competitive, right, it comes down to a one-possession game. You have to be feeling pretty damn good about that based on what you just saw last week.
Right.
So, I mean, time's going to tell on that. I'm not as low as a lot of people are, especially I've seen a lot of people criticize the defense. I'm not that low on the defense. I think they did about the best they could in the situation they were presented. Yeah, there's stuff to fix. They're not without fault, but far and away, that's not the biggest issue. I think Prefer should be gone next year, honestly. If he's not, I don't know what the fuck we're doing. I don't get it. He's been through how many kickers and how many punters. He still can't figure it out. And our coverage stream is absolute garbage. Like, this...
Well, it needs to improve, and I think certainly we've seen Zimmer have a short leash with at times. So if it's something that continually is a problem here, I wouldn't be shocked if that is a move that they make, especially if they like somebody, you know, to come up and take that spot. So definitely something to keep an eye on, and I don't know. It's got to improve. I mean, Bailey, unfortunately, I know a lot of people, myself included, because he's on my fantasy team, and ultimately probably cost me a win this week. Of course, didn't get an opportunity to kick, which also I thought was weird. You know, the game's essentially over at the end. Why not give the guy a snap, you know, with the new faces, snap, hold, kick, you know, just give him a little bit, give him confidence, give him a kick. Of course we go for two, which is just classic Zimmer in that situation. But, well, I don't know.
Which I mean, even if you're trying to catch up, if you really think that you can make that win happen, going for two doesn't gain you anything. It's still a four possession game. So I didn't really understand why you'd do that.
Right. So,
I'm right there with you on that as well. That onside kick he had did look decent.
Yeah, that's true.
I wasn't able to see much of that. I think at that point I was pretty much not paying attention. But I was at the game, so I obviously was not able to see a ton of the really bad stuff that you probably saw in all the replays and all the angles. One thing I did do, though, and we'll go into some positives here, because there is some positives, all right? So after about midway through the third quarter, I started to zero in on Brian O'Neill, and he looked absolutely solid. Didn't seem like he needed help. They kept on chipping him, but he didn't seem like he needed it. I wish I could find the GIF or the video of it, because there was a certain pass block where he actually blocked the guy backwards. It was comically awesome. I don't know if you remember that snap at all, or if you had turned it off or stopped paying attention at that point.
No, I watched the whole game, but I mean, obviously, I'm not, when we were getting killed, I wasn't honed in on a specific guy like you were there. So
yeah, I was very interested in seeing that. So I think the future right now is very bright for him. I would really love to see him start Thursday because I think he's ready for that test. If Reef is still out and can't go, we're obviously going to have some really weird combination of offensive line, and we're going to have to do something really weird with the offense to make it work. So that was one positive I took away from this. Second positive, we didn't miss any kicks.
Yeah.
I mean, we only kicked off twice and had that onside kick. But we didn't miss any kicks. So that was good.
It's true.
Treadwell made some nice catches.
It's true. He had no drops. I think he had, 4 for 33 or something like that, which is probably a career game for him. So
it is. He bounced back a little bit. Hopefully he can continue to parlay that into better games going forward and be a bit more reliable in the future. So we'll kind of see how that goes. Let's see. You mentioned leaving Barr back in Minnesota for Thursday's game. I can totally sign off on that. That would probably improve the defense at this point based on how he's been playing. I know some people think he's been playing fine, but no, he's been playing scared. He's been missing stuff. I disagree with that he's been playing anywhere close to what he should be. Especially in a contract year, you think he'd be playing a bit better than this.
Yeah, I mean, it's been frustrating. Obviously, he's the type of dynamic player that we know can bring it and can turn it around. So I think it's just I'm going to give him another chance here now with some primetime games and big-time opponents to let's see what you can do. But, I mean, if we're frustrated and we're seeing it, I can only imagine that Zim is seeing it as well. So right. I think, you know, he's got to improve. And what a better chance than to come out here on Thursday night primetime game. And, I mean, at the end of the day, if we don't sign him, he's got a chance to make money elsewhere. So, you know, he's going to want to showcase himself on these big primetime games. And I hope he turns it around, but this has been the case with him all along, right? It's why you and I have been hesitant. He's up and down. He can play at a Pro Bowl. Not that Pro Bowl necessarily means anything anymore, but he can play at a really high level in this league, but he can also, you know, look like an average linebacker and potentially below average at times. So I think let's have Barr as a player to watch going forward, and I hope it starts here in a couple of days in Los Angeles.
All right. Any other talking points before we wrap up this probably shorter than average recap because there isn't a ton of contentious points to talk about?
I guess let me ask you one thing. I mean, I know you're at the game, but Diggs. I mean, Diggs looked...
He was open a couple times. He was open, like, quite a lot, actually. And my God, that late roughing call that should have been called on him, where he essentially body slammed him out of bounds.
What
in the hell? Why do we not get that flag?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, when I watched that one live, initially I thought that he hit him, you know, was contacted inbounds in a dive and kind of, I thought it was close enough that I was okay with the non-call. I think on the replay,
That was a power bomb, man.
Yeah, so I don't know. I mean, I just thought it was a little bit, I thought Diggs has kind of turned the corner, and I'm not saying like this is anything against him, but it was a little shocking to only see him. What did he had like 4 for 30 or something like that, I think?
You know, I think it was a cacophony of situations there where you're looking at a constantly under duress Cousins. I think there was 32 or something, you know, 25 credited pressures to the offensive line. Reef and Remmers combined for 20. So he was constantly under duress. I think he dropped back 45 times. So 2/3 of that, he's under pressure. That does things to quarterbacks. I don't think there's a quarterback in the league that wouldn't change his decision making and change his vision based on that kind of pressure coming down on you play after play after play. So I think some of the routes that Diggs was doing were just developing a tiny bit too late, and pressure was already there, so he didn't really have a chance to look there and throw it.
Right,
because you look at the replay, there's a couple really nice routes that Diggs had that there was just no way the ball was going to be able to get there in time.
Right.
It's just how it went, you know? So I'm going to ask you this. We'll see how down you are on this team right now. What's your projection for the record right now?
Well, I think that, you know, I knew this, the front five here was the most brutal, in my opinion, just because it's at Lambeau, at Rams, at Eagles. And I probably had us pegged for two losses in those three games. And I had us projected as a 13-win team. So obviously I'm was relatively confident that the, you know, the latter part was going to go really well, after the bye, et cetera. So, at this point, you know, no Talib and Peters, obviously I think we've got a chance in that game. I think I got to drop us down though. I think I'm more 11-5 than 13-3 at this point, which obviously we can't go, that exactly with a tie. So, you know, maybe 11-4-1.
Wow, that's a lot higher than I thought you'd be at right now.
I mean, I'm not going to completely mail this in yet, but I think that they really need to come out and show me something in these next two football games.
Sure. That's fair. And I think I'm right there with you, especially on the Rams bit. We get a little bit lucky without them, with them not having those couple guys. We'll get into more of this in the preview show. But that to me is a winnable game. You need to capitalize on this. You need to come back from this and bounce back. If you don't win this one, you get 10 days to prepare for Philadelphia, who doesn't look invincible by any stretch. I mean, they won 20-16 against Indianapolis, and Indianapolis is not really that complete of a team. So clearly there's some stuff there that they can be beaten on. If we're purely looking at that, we're looking at the upcoming next 2 weeks. I think we should be able to take one, if not two, of those if we're lucky enough.
Okay.
Obviously, that projection will entirely change based on what happens Thursday. If we completely shit the bed again, then it could easily be that we drop down to projection of like, I don't know, 5-10-1. Because if we can't get back to our true form in the next 2 weeks, I don't think we have a shot the rest of the year.
Yeah, I mean, it's big. I mean, I think that you could still come out of these games going 1-1 and feel relatively good. You know, these are two very good football teams that you're going to play both on the road. So I think if you can manage to come out of this at 2-2-1. Yeah, I'm certainly going to feel okay moving forward, especially since that tie is against Green Bay. If you can take care of business at home, I think the division is still ours. It's just, I mean, you and I feel the same way that if we can lock up that one seed, it's so vital. But then again, you know, the reason was home field, and certainly Buffalo just showed us how we, you know, volatile at home as well.
At this point, I think I'm still on the 11-4-1, and I had this team at a floor of a 12-4 team. So depending upon what happens in the next few weeks, I think one is going to be a stretch, but there's a lot of turmoil going on with the NFC right now.
Right.
There's so many moving parts right now. So it could be that 11-4-1 gets you the number one seed, because it could just break that way. It could be that we end up 12-3-1, and that's enough to get you there. Who knows? But I think the key is winning the division and at least getting number three seed to host at least one game.
Right.
If we can do that, I think you kind of just open the book. Just get in the tournament and just see what happens. See how it plays out. Maybe that's what we need. We need to come in a little bit less hot and just ride it out full playoffs and not have a bye. So we don't have a chance to have that letdown again.
Right.
But yeah, that's where I'm at. If you have any closing thoughts, I think we pretty much talked this one to death. There's not much left to do.
No, I don't. I mean, let's move on. We're on to Los Angeles, I think.
We're on to Los Angeles. So that's going to wrap it up for us. Skolgers.com. I'm at Namok7 on the Twitter.
Muskie_Mike.
We're on the Climbing the Pocket Network if you're listening to us over there. Stop by, listen to more other stuff. We got plenty of good podcasts for your listening pleasure. But I think it's going to wrap it up for Buffalo Bills throttling the Vikings. We're on to Los Angeles, and we'll hopefully have you listening to us then. Skol.
Skol.